Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Mike's on. He's ready to go.
On the Fan.
New York Sports Radio.
Mike's on. Mike's on.
He'll get you the sports any way that he can. It's Mike Francisa.
Radio 66 and 101.9 FM, WFAN.
All right, we come to you on this Monday evening. Take you right up until 7 o'clock. Brought to you by Casamigos Tequila, as always. Brought to you by those who drink it on what has been a absolutely beautiful Monday. I mean, you couldn't have a nicer day. It's going to get a little warmer tomorrow, but today was one of those, you know, perfect days where it was just the sun was hot, but the sky was clear and there was very little humidity. A beautiful, beautiful day today. And you know what? Hey, that's what June is for. It's for beautiful days like this. No matter what is going on, New York City began its first step forward today. It's got a lot of steps to take, obviously. And everything else is moving along at a glacier pace here in sports, as you know. Because, you know, I've made this point a couple of times. The leagues that are ready to come back are not coming back for another almost 7 weeks. You know, they're not coming back for a long time. They haven't even gotten any really serious work in yet. They're a long way from coming back. They're a long way from even getting back to action in any real way, little by little. For Met fans today, there is a story of a new player, and this is a legitimate player because Harris Blitzer owns, you know, owns franchises. They own basketball and hockey teams. They have plenty of money, okay? They even are involved in soccer over in England. So these guys, they come from, obviously, these are Wall Street types. They have plenty of money. Wall Street's where the money is. Wall Street's where the new ownership in sports is going to come from most of the time. It's going to come from guys who are, that doesn't mean they have to be on Wall Street physically. It means that they are participating in that game. They're going to come from having made their fortunes, most likely in stocks or in the area of world finance. And that's what you had with Steve Cohen. And he went away. There's been a lot of little talk about him getting back involved. Who knows if he will. And now you had the A-Rod, J-Lo flirtation, which I never took seriously. Again, I don't take athletes seriously in this regard because they're just not in the same league financially. And then you got these guys, and this was a Bloomberg report, and Bloomberg's all over these financial things. And clearly, Harris Blitzer have the ability, if they want to get involved, they can get involved on this deal. They clearly have the resources to get involved if that's, you know, they have involvement with the Sixers, with the Devils, with e-franchises. Well, a lot of people have e-franchises. And then they also are involved with soccer teams, a soccer team over in England. So they're already involved in a big way, and now they're going to at least kick the tires on the Mets as all this. I would think the Met franchise did not move much in value. There had been a thought that it would have to go down. And probably, I don't know if that's the case. I wouldn't make it the case. If I was gonna sell my home during this year, I would either sell it at the price that I've wanted to sell it for before this happened, or I wouldn't sell it. So if you put something up for sale, it doesn't mean you're going to cave on price. It means that if somebody hits your price, you're willing to sell it. Otherwise, you sit and wait. And you say, I'll wait for another day. That's all. Now, you know, there are sellers, and then there are motivated sellers. There are sellers, and then there are desperate sellers. So I would not put the Mets in the classification of desperate sellers. There are a lot of teams, though, that are getting antsy because the way they are structured, they get very cash poor very quickly. They're set up that way. They need to churn. They need to have revenue coming in. And right now they don't have the revenue coming in. So it puts a strain on the organizations, especially when they feed a lot of mouths. And a lot of these organizations do. And a lot of them have a lot of payments that have to be made and different, you know, responsibilities that they have to make financially. And if they don't have any revenue coming in, it sometimes puts a strain on organizations that are clearly solvent. No one's saying they're not. You can be very well off and be cash poor, especially when you have set your business up for it always to be able to produce revenues along through the given year. When you shut the sport down, it changes everything. All the revenue streams are stopped. Revenue streams that you're very used to, that you count on, are stopped. It changes things dramatically. As far as baseball, you're going to hear these gestures back and forth. You heard the 76-game plan that was quickly rejected because there was no changes in it. It was still the same deal. Somebody is going to have to come up with baseball on both sides. Somebody is going to have to come up with an outside-the-box, one-year plan that both sides understand insulates them from this being a factor in what next year was about, because next year they were going to look to make a big deal and they do not want to damage the future when they're looking at a 10-year span. They don't want to do anything that would impact that. They would rather shut it down than do that and take their hit with the fans. See, they'll pay lip service that you scare them, but you don't. In their heart of hearts, they believe they got you. They believe you'll come back. I don't believe this time you'll come back as fast. I don't think you would have come back as fast when they canceled the World Series. I think they got very lucky. I saw a lot of anger out of the fans at that time. I saw a lot of disinterest out of the fans at that time. And frankly, if it had not been a completely, really produced home run race and home run confrontation from heaven that just captivated everybody, they would have taken a very long time to come back. So I don't believe that they fear your backlash. Don't believe they do. I think they'll pay lip service to it, but I don't believe they fear it. I do think they fear each other, and they fear the repercussions of each other. And I think they both will pay lip service to the responsibility of the sport, the standing of the sport in the community, and the fans, but I don't think they care about any of that. I think they care about money. And they care about where they set the economic parameters for their game for the next 10 years. A couple of things. I heard a thing that Joe and Evan did for a couple minutes with Faye. They replayed with Faye and Faye Vincent. He made a comment about a lot of things. And Faye still comes up with some interesting stuff, although some of it's a little from a different era. But he made the point that Rose is going to have to be treated differently because of the way gambling's a big part of sport now. I don't believe that one has anything to do with the other. But I do think this. There is no reason that if baseball uses its noggin again, that they can't do something that the fans would like that is very safe. Get Pete, who's getting older, and say, Pete, we want to give you your day in Cooperstown. But here's the deal. Very quietly, we're not going to talk about suspensions. We're not going to talk about jobs in baseball. We're not going to talk about any of that. What you're going to do is you're going to sign a release which states, and a piece of paper that states that you waive, you know, any ability or any rights to work in Major League Baseball. You're no one going within basically, you know, 5 football fields of a stadium. And if you do that, we'll let you have your day. And that's it. No employment. You cannot seek employment inside the sport. And I don't think, listen, teams will do that because he'll fill stadiums. That's why. They'll want him in ballparks because he'll fill stadiums. So they'll want to use him that way. You can even do that. You can have a day for him in Cincinnati, which will sell out the building. You can have a day for him in a couple of places where it'll probably – you could have a day for him in Philadelphia, which might sell out the building. You can have a day for him in 3 or 4 places. That's fine. Just he cannot take a job in minor league or Major League Baseball. That's all. Not a full-time job. Can't be around the players. He's not allowed on an active baseball field. Case closed. Let him have his day. Let him have his day in the sun. You know, we know he still gambles. Heck, you're doing business with gamblers now. Gambling's going to be one of your major revenue streams in the years to come. So you can't act like you're somehow Pollyanna about gambling anymore. Those days are gone. But they fear that Rose could be an issue. So this way, he helps you from a standpoint of selling tickets down the road, and you make a lot of fans happy because a lot of them have felt, and let's be honest, the Hall of Fame is really, as much as it's a building upstate, the Hall of Fame is in the hearts and minds of baseball fans. That's where it lives. And we know who Hall of Famers are and who they aren't. And Pete Rose is a Hall of Famer. In all our hearts and minds, he's in the Hall of Fame anyway. And they have artifacts of him in the Hall of Fame, which is almost comical. So put him in. You want to mention it on the plaque? Maybe you can make an agreement. Maybe you can nice and not mention it on the plaque. I don't think it's necessary to mention it on a plaque. But you can give him that as long as you keep him far away from the sport, which I think he can easily do at this stage of his life without any question. Shaq made an interesting point. Sometimes, you know, he makes a lot of goofy points, but he made an interesting point about the Saints not letting what's going on with Breeze divide the team, especially a good team that has a chance to be a Super Bowl team. I think that's a good point. I think that could be an issue on that team this year. And I think there could be some issues on some teams this year. If it's possible. It looks now like the sport is all on one page, but you don't know if it really is. And you wonder if that will create any fissures, any problems down the line for teams. You have to wait and see. But he's right, that's something you do have to watch, especially with a team that you're trying to make a run with. And one of your key players late in his career trying to win one more championship. We'll open up the phone lines early tonight, get what's on your mind, whatever you want to talk about, whatever it is. If it's the Mets and whether they have found a new owner, which, again, this is only stage one. Anything to do with Rose, anything to do with that last baseball plan. I see Dalvin Cook's going to hold out. Hey, when a guy has the success he's had early, also had the injury he had early and didn't make his money yet, you know that's going to happen. As far as the two switch hitters today on this June 8th, for Bernie it was 1996. Good year for him. 3 for 5, 2 runs scored, 3 RBIs. He hit 2 homers. Homers 9 and 10. And at this point, it was 10-42. Mickey, it was 1960, which is a year that he won the home run crown, but lost the MVP by one vote to Roger. Roger hit 39 homers, had more RBIs. Mickey had 40 home runs, had fewer RBIs, and won the home run crown. Roger won the MVP by one vote. The Yankees were struggling early in 60. They were only 24-21 at this point in the season. Mickey went 2-for-4, also hit 2 home runs, also hit his 9th and 10th home runs, but only had 22 RBIs, while Bernie had 42 RBIs on the same date. So he wasn't off to a big RBI start, and he did not have a big RBI year, despite the fact he hit 40 home runs. Did not have one of his big RBI years. It was low, considering he hit 40 home runs to lead the league. And it cost him an MVP. But again, remember, he won 3 and could have won another 5. That's how close he was on that many times. He finished within an eyelash. But that's what happened when you have that kind of dominant player during those eras in the American League. And Maris, remember, beat him for the MVP in 60 and 61. Mickey came back and won it in 62 after winning it twice in the 50s and won 3 of them. I thought he should have won it in 64. He got beat by Brooks Robinson. Like I said, he had a lot of close votes for the Hall of Fame. So that's where we are. We'll get everything rolling. Brought to you again by Casamigo Tequila on this beautiful June 8th, right after this. All right, we're back on this Monday evening. Take you right up until 7 o'clock. JJ, come your way at that time. Obviously, again, whenever there starts to be any flirtation with the Mets, Met fans get excited about that. These guys are legitimate. You know, that's the first thing you want to know about. Is it a legitimate bid? These guys have the wherewithal. They do. Bloomberg Stories understand the financial part very, very well. So if they report it as being, you know, guys who, when they tell you the guys are legit, they are. These guys clearly are. Now, what their interest is, I have no idea. We'll find out in the weeks and days to come. You know, there's been a lot of thought that with this year the way it is, especially where it might be a shutdown year, it might be a year where there's going to be a lot of losses. Clearly, there's going to be a reevaluating of franchises in the short term, not in the long term. You know, one bad year is not going to destroy a franchise. You know, if you got a franchise that's worth $3 billion and you have a bad year, so be it. It happens. I mean, it's not going to be, you know, it is not going to be a big deal in the long run. It really isn't. So, I mean, you take a short-term hit. Now, the one thing is, though, is that, as I stated before, a lot of these franchises, not just the ones that you think struggle to keep up with the big guys, even the big guys, they can be cash poor. They can be short-term revenue, short-term funds, because they're not set up that way. They expect the money to come in at certain dates from certain entities, broadcast entities, television, radio, you know, et cetera, you know, go down the line. You know, you're into June, they say by June we're killing it. We got money coming in every day, every single. Well, now you're into this many months. You've outlaid cash. You've paid other workers. You've paid players some money. You've paid minor leaguers some money. You've had expenses in a lot of areas, and you haven't had any revenue. I don't know yet. It depends what how deals are structured as to how partners pay teams and don't pay teams. That's very much contract to contract. So in some places, remember, baseball teams are a little different. They make money. There's a portion of the money that is very different from team to team. And it deals with their place in the marketplace. And you have some teams that have very, you know, incredible revenue streams in their marketplace, like the Yankees, the Dodgers, the Red Sox, go down the list. And you have teams that have minuscule, Tampa Bay, Seattle, you know, go down the list, where you're in different cities and the revenue streams. But they have learned to live and in a lot of places thrive with those conditions. So, but there are different pressures here. And selling teams in this climate, it's tricky. But remember, these guys who sell these teams and package these teams and make these deals are very good at doing this. They're specialists at doing it. And they do it looking at the long term. They don't do it looking at a year-to-year basis. They look at it as assets that are assets you're going to see appreciate and change fortunes over decades, not over weeks and months, over decades. All right, let's get some calls in here. Jason in Great Neck, what's up, Jason?
Hey, Mike, what's going on?
What's happening?
Given Roger Goodell's comments the other day, do you think he would somehow align or somehow integrate the Black Lives Matter organization with the NFL, or do you think that would be just too controversial, given some of the, you know?
Explain to me what you mean, aligned.
Like, I'm sure they have, police departments that they have, you know, like just some organizations that they promote. Do you think that they would, you know, promote the Black Lives Matter organization as a whole, or do you think that?
No, I think this has more to do with how they deal with the outspoken nature of their. I think it has to do with two things: how they deal with the outspoken nature of their players, how they react to what their players do, both in terms of their statements and actions, and also what the teams inside the league can do. It's really a twofold approach. What do the teams do in each individual city to make things better? And also, then what can the league do using the entire resources of the NFL to make things better? And I think that's the idea. Do I think that they are going to be involved very heavily in one organization versus another? No, I don't think that's the case. I think it's a case of trying to come to an understanding with their players. I think that's what this is more about than anything else is, you know, there was a split with the NFL and the players over how they protest, how they chose to protest, how the protest was going to manifest itself, that kind of stuff. And I think that's what he's talking about, is having a better relationship with the players in that regard. And being very much more not only tolerant but understanding and actually getting behind some of that stuff, where the NFL, it looks like, rather than try and say, we'd rather you don't do this, sounds like the NFL is going to say, now, we're involved, we're going to get involved with it. But that doesn't mean, and thanks for the call, that they're going to be involved with any specific group. I didn't get that, you know. But again, we'll wait to see what the NFL's actions are. I'm not sure what their actions are yet. You know, what we saw was the Goodell statement. We'll see what the actions are. You know, what he intends to do to going down the line. We'll wait and see. Matt Manhattan, what's up, Matt?
Yeah. Now, I thought of a way in which I think a very short baseball season, like if they were only to do 60 games, there's a way to make it, I think, fascinating. And that is, this is a crazy idea. Take both leagues, or take each half of the country and divide it up geographically, play the games, and then just have...
Listen, don't worry about what happens on the field. Tell me how the players get paid.
With 60 games?
No, just tell me how do they get paid?
They would have to prorate it.
And they get paid full for the 60 games?
On a prorated basis? But, I mean, what...
And how long are the playoffs? Remember, the owners want longer play. What you're coming up with is an idea of, I want to play this. This is what I want to happen on the field. On the field for them is the easy part. The hard part is the economics. The easy part for them is what happens on the field. That's not the hard part for them. You know, the hard part is the economics.
I think that if you had that short of a season without any playoffs...
Well, the players don't want a season that... The players don't want a 60-game season. They've already stated they don't want a 60-game... See, the short season helps the owners. The long season helps the players. You understand that?
But from a, I'm just saying, from a fan perspective, can you imagine a season where every single baseball game mattered?
I don't think. Listen, baseball is a sport that baseball is not a playoff sport per se by itself. Baseball is a sport where the regular season has tremendous meaning. Unlike some other sports where you get through the season to create a 2-month playoff, baseball, the regular season does matter.
Multiple layers of playoffs in a baseball season is anything less than, you know, over 100 games. To me, that demeans everything.
Again, but if you make the playoffs long and the regular season short, you know, players won't agree to it because that's where the owners make their money.
Then
remember. We know that, but what your solution didn't help solve the problem. Your plan is for the field, which is fine. I mean, that's fine. We could come up with a million plans for the field, but that doesn't solve the economic problem, which is one wants a short regular season and a long postseason. The other one wants a longer regular season and a shorter postseason. That's the difference. And payment and how they split up the money is the issue. Because they don't remember this. It isn't even about this year so much. What they don't want to do is set a precedent that can be used for either side's advantage next year when they hope to negotiate a long-term collective bargaining agreement that will set the economics of the sport for a decade. That's what they're worried about. They're worried about something this year that will impact next year, and they are not going to allow that to happen because then it affects the game for the decade. And that's what they're not trying to do. They both realize they have an issue this year. And I'm telling you, rather than have their side take a bad deal this year, they've already showed you this, rather than their side take a bad deal this year that would hurt them for the next 10 years, they will not play this year. And that's a dangerous risk. And I think it's a much more dangerous risk than they think it is. Because I'm telling you, I don't think they believe it is a big risk. They think you guys will come back. I don't think you'll come back as fast. But they will. Their biggest issues is the long-term collective bargaining agreement and anything that impacts that. And they won't do anything this year that can be used against them next year. Kevin in West Islip, what's up, Kevin? Oh, he's gone. We'll take a quick break. We'll come right back. You know, the new offer that the owners made is basically the same offer. I mean, it's not anything new. It was completely dismissed out of hand by the players, and that's why there'll be one legitimate move. It'll probably be, if I had to guess, somewhere in the 72 game area, if I looking for a meeting of the minds in the middle somewhere, the games would be somewhere where the owners would like it to be, you know, somewhere around 50 or 60. The players would like it to be up in 115. So I think it'll be more towards low 70s at the top. And then it comes down to, seriously comes down to how the money would be paid and how much money we're talking about for the players. And then you can get into all the other things. But also a big part of this is there can be no language or no edicts. I mean, things like the DH and stuff, players don't care about that stuff. That's on the field stuff, they're fine with that stuff. This is about economics. It's about economics, but more what it's about setting a precedent and doing nothing to damage the long-term negotiation that is in place for next year. Because then they set the tone for a decade. Then they set the future of the sport. And the players are looking to do dents into pools that the owners are trying to protect this year. Don't you think the players want to get into the gambling pool? They know that pool's going to be enormous. Don't you think they want to get into the streaming pool? Of course they do, and they want to get into the playoff pool. And the owners want to protect those pools, and the owners want to knock on the door of a salary cap. They've been trying to knock on that door forever. They're trying to knock on that door a little bit. Well, we're not calling it a cap, but, you know, in essence, what is it? Well, it's a salary cap. So all this goes on, and you have the guys who on each side who feel they're the protectors of the flame for each side. And they're both very entrenched and very successful and very well fortified financially. But they're still playing with fire in that it'll take them a while to come back from this economically, and they will take hits. And unfortunately, the marginal player, the minor leaguers, the minor league cities, the people who work at the ballparks, the people who make a living at the ballparks, the people who work in peripheral businesses around the ballpark, they've all been clobbered, and nobody's been there arguing for them. Mike in Plainfield, what's up, Mike?
How are things going?
Good. What's happening?
Hey, I was wondering, everyone's talking about the 94 strike and the lead up to that. I was like 6 or 7 at the time. I remember being upset that baseball was gone, but I didn't understand what was going on. So I'm just curious, what was like the talk radio, public opinion in the lead up to that? Was it one of anger? Was it one of sin?
It was, first of all, it was very divided. A perfect example on our show, which was the Mike and the Mayor show, which was the by far the biggest show. Dog was pro player. Dog was pro owner. I was pro player. I took the player side. He took the owner side. But more than that, we both said, "How dare you even consider shutting the sport down?"
Right.
And we threatened them just like everyone else did. You'll pay forever if you threaten. And everyone told us, every guest we had on in baseball would say to us, neither side's crazy enough to shut the other. And we would have the combatants on. We would have the commissioner on. We would have Fear and Orser on. We would have all the combatants on. And everyone would say the same thing. Oh, no one is going to shut the World Series down. No one's crazy enough to shut the World. Well, they shut the World Series down. And I'm telling you, they got very lucky. They got very lucky that baseball came back as well as it did. It did not come back immediately, but Sosa and Maguire brought baseball back. And they looked the other way.
Too. I mean, around here, you had a team that...
Well, it really, I'm telling you... Well, the Yankees started to get hot, and you're right, and they got very hot, and all of a sudden they had a wonderful team, and then 96 to go on and win a World Series. But the Sosa-Maguire thing really raised the game back across the country. It was magical what went on with that, and everyone got into it. And thanks for the call. Everyone got into that, and it saved them dramatically. And they looked the other way because, I mean, listen, Maguire came to New York. Dog was on vacation. I do a show from Citi Field, from Shea Stadium when Maguire's going for 50 homers. And the talk is that Maguire's sitting there doing a ton of interviews with Andrew in his locker. And that's how bold they were in those days. I mean, he's got the stuff right in his locker. And remember, Orser in those days, as the lawyer, and you had Orser, you had Fear, you had Wiener. These guys, they fought and believed that it was their players' rights, their privacy and their rights, that you had no right, the media had no right, the owners had no right to have any interest in whether they do drugs or don't do drugs. That's their own private business. Except one thing, they were illegal in the United States. But it was Congress. Congress actually was the difference maker because they finally were going to go after baseball about it, and they went after. They brought Harvey Waxman brought Bud in and beat the heck out of him, and that's when everything changed. But before that happened, they had brought baseball back. And when they brought it back, they sold their soul. They let them take as many drugs as they wanted, and they were taking drugs like crazy, and they were pounding out home runs like crazy. Ray in Connecticut, what's up, Ray?
Mike, how are you? You
good.
And your children.
Good. Everybody's good, thank you. What's happening?
Listen, to follow up on what you're talking about, the Sosa and Maguire home run derby, if you will, brought fans to the stand. But your point that, that Major League Baseball doesn't care, I want to kind of disagree with, because it wasn't until 2006, 12 years later, all right, that Major League Baseball sold as many tickets as they had done in 1993.
Baseball cared dramatically. Listen, baseball never cares. You watch now. You think they care now. They're in the middle of a national crisis, and you see how much they care about what their role is in the sport. They'll shut this sport down in a second. So the idea that they care about what the public thinks, nonsense. They don't care.
What I'm trying to say to you is, as a business notion, they do care. I'm not saying that they care.
They care more about what they care more about what happens in the collective bargaining agreement for the next 10 years than they do anything else.
So why not, therefore, reach an agreement now?
They won't negotiate that deal this year. That deal isn't for this year. They will not negotiate this under this duress this year. They will not negotiate that deal, because that deal is going to set baseball up for the next 10 years. They're not going to do it.
All right, and maybe they don't.
And listen, do not think for a second they won't shut this sport down, because they will.
I agree, but just one last observation, all right? You may disagree with my statement, okay?
What's his name?
I believe that owners in baseball think that the greatest thing that Bud Selig was able to do, all right, other than having Rob Manfred negotiate labor contracts for him, okay, was to build new stadia, okay? And, you know, the only stadium...
Well, every sport wants new stadiums always. I mean, that's part of it.
Again, that's true, but my point is, you gotta pay the debt. You gotta service the debt.
Well, wait a second. A lot of time, listen, they're going to always try to push towns to give them tax breaks. Every business does that.
I get that, but they
every business they hold cities hostage. Every business holds cities hostage.
How much money did the Yankees borrow?
Well, you see, but again, you're getting specific now. This is not, now you're going from, and thanks for the call, but you're going all over the place. You're going to a Yankee issue now. And listen, in their municipalities, I am a firm believer in not one tax dollar and not one civic dollar for a stadium. They have enough money to buy their own stadiums and fund their own stadiums. So I've been a believer of that for a long time. But they do hold cities hostage, but they're not any different than anything else. Chase Manhattan will hold the city hostage. They'll say, you know what, we're going to take our business to Jersey if you don't give us this, 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 and this. They give it to them. That's how cities work. Cities steal businesses from other cities. They steal jobs from other cities by giving breaks to other cities. They all do it. That's how cities operate. I mean, that's the world we live in. That's part of the world we live in. And sports is no different. I mean, Al Davis made a living doing it, working one city against the other and everything else. They all do it. I would not, in this climate, when they have so much money now, I would not do that anymore. And most cities now, when they put a stadium tax thing on the referendum to be voted on, it gets voted down. What doesn't get voted down is charging people a hotel tax so that the people who come into your city. In Dallas, I went in there during the Super Bowl. I looked at my hotel bill. Now, I had an expensive hotel room when I was staying at the Super Bowl. I admit that. I had a $100 a day bill for the stadium tax bill on my hotel bill. I mean, they were making anyone who came through the town pay for it. And we had no say in that, but you know what? Tough luck. We don't have to go to their town if we don't want to. But that, those are the kind of things that they have done in recent years. Oh, put it on every hotel room. You know, instead of putting it on each person. Now, very hard now in areas that are heavily taxed. Like they couldn't get it through for the Nassau Coliseum here. They tried to do it. They put the vote 6 o'clock in the morning, tried to, you know, on an August morning, tried to get it through. Still couldn't get it through. People don't want their taxes raised. So now they won't, most stadium referendums go down. In the old days they didn't, now they do. But the idea of, hey, we're just asking you to let us put a tax, a $10 or a 2% or a 5% tax, you know, thing on, you know, surcharge on the hotel room, they don't care about that. because it doesn't affect them. They live in that town. Dom in Westchester, what's up, Dom?
On your side,
this both sides, the stressful. Hello. Let's go. Yeah, go ahead, Dom. Go ahead quickly. All right, Max in Houston, what's up, Max?
Hey, Mike, how are you?
Good.
I kind of want to do what you do when I grow up. So I was thinking, since it's summertime here, I was thinking about the NFL and the draft that recently took place. I remember all the backlash after Jalen Hurts got drafted to the Eagles in the second round. Here's the thing. Carson Wentz should actually be they're grateful that they take the chance on Jalen Hurts. This sounds crazy, but a year ago, like 2 days,
Max, I'm sorry, but listen, you're calling from Houston to a New York station, and you're talking about a Philadelphia sports issue. What's going on?
I just thought I had a good take.
Well, thanks. Listen, give me something a little more. Next time you call, give me something a little that my audience might give a darn about, all right, in the middle of this thing right now. Say you're calling from Houston, and then giving me a take on something in Philadelphia. Richard in Manhattan. Go ahead, Richard.
Hi, Mike. Mike, in Willie Mays' book, 24.
Oh my God! Now wait a second. What is this? Oh, in his new book. Okay, you're reading. Well, that's a tape promotion, but I have not read the book. Go ahead. But okay. Wait a second. What are we talking about now? What year? Okay, the controversial 62. I would have been. Yeah, and Mays. Willie Mays hung out his own teammates and said, I would have been in the locker room and showered by the time the throw would have hit the plate.
That's right.
And that is a nasty.
He said a loop pulled up at
the. Hey.
He said,
hey,
it was him running it first, but that was the
and you see,
Maris's arm.
The bottom line is, it was a great play by Maris.
Right.
And, all right, would Mays, first of all, that's Willie throwing his own teammates under the bus.
Right. Well, okay.
Yeah. Wait a second. Did he or did he not?
Yeah, maybe.
Willie could have hit in that series, which he didn't do in the 7-game series. Matter of fact, Willie Mays never hit in the World Series his whole life. And go back and look. Willie Mays played, had 71 World Series at bats, never hit a World Series home run.
Mike, if there was sports talk radio, game 5 in the 64 World Series, top of the 10th, McCarver up, Pete Mickelson are right here.
Of course, listen, yes. And listen, because it's a different, it was a different. Hey, Richard, what happened in 1962? Who pitched to Willie McCovey?
Ross Terry.
And what did he pitch? Which arm did he throw with?
Left hand to a right hand to a left-handed hitter.
To a great left-handed hitter.
Correct.
Okay, and he hit a P.
Correct, to Richardson.
Which, if he doesn't catch,
but
they'll talk.
Sports radio. What would have happened to Yogi and Ralph Casey in those days?
Well, listen, it would have happened the same thing that happens now. Thanks for the call. Okay. Would we have killed Yogi for not start? Would we have killed Willie? I mean, would we have killed Casey for not starting Whitey Ford in 60? Yes. Did Casey do screwy things like that? Yes. I don't know why I still to this day don't know what the explanation was why he didn't pitch Whitey. And a lot of people, including the higher-ups, thought that, well, they thought Casey was getting old anyway, but they also thought that it cost them the World Series because Whitey was untouchable. And we know what happened. Is it strange that, hey, how strange is it that Johnny Keene leaves Bob Gibson in the 9th inning when he gives up home runs to Phil Lynch and Cleet Boyer, and he's still on the mound at 7-5? How would that be in this day and age? It was a different world in those days. They did things differently. They didn't do bullpen. There was no automatic bullpen in those days. There was no lefty-righty. There was no automatic move like there is now. now you have the automatic rote move to the closer, the automatic rote move to the left-hander versus the right-hander, the automatic setup move. You didn't have that in those days. It was a different world. They did not yank starting pitchers in those days, and they did not treat, you know, bullpen matchups the same way. Is some of that stuff crazy when you think about it? Yes. Absolutely. I mean, some of that stuff is, but guys had roles, and they did their roles. And as Keene said, I made a commitment to Gibson's heart. Now, what would he have done if a couple of the guys got on base and Mantle got up in that inning? You know what? He would have left Gibson in. And Mantle hit a monster three-run home run off him in the fifth inning. It went 460 feet. But he would have left guys in. I mean, he believed in giving the starting pitcher. I mean, he believed in Bob Gibson. And that's how it was. It was a different world, though. Completely different world. And would have sports talk been wild in those days? How would sports talk have been in 1951 with the shot heard around the world? Go through that inning and what happened in that inning and the strategy that went on. I mean, that's classic stuff that would have been fun to talk about, absolutely. Steve in Northport, real quick, what's up?
If baseball isn't played this year, can the owners decertify the union?
I don't believe so, but I don't know what grounds, and I'm not a union lawyer, so I don't know that. I don't know that law. So I couldn't answer that to you, Steve. You got to ask a lawyer that question. I don't know the answer to I don't know the answer to that question. I don't know one, and thanks for the call, but I don't know one what grounds they would be able to do that. I don't think they would be able to do it. It doesn't seem logical to me what grounds they would be able to decertify it as they would no longer deal with that negotiating arm. I don't think so because the players have a right to vote for the negotiating arm that they want. So I don't see any grounds that they would have to do that. I don't think so. I think if that were possible, they would have done it years ago. Or at least threatened it years ago. But I'm not a labor attorney. I can't answer that question, to be honest with you. All right, Casamigos Tequila, as always, brings you the program brought to you by those who drink it. Have a good Monday night. We'll see you tomorrow.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.